Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to Rooted Agritourism. I'm Dr. Liz Fidler-Mergen, owner of Sunny Mary Meadow, a U-Pick flower farm, wedding florist, and event venue in central Minnesota. Our mission is to serve anyone rooted in agritourism, value-added agriculture, and rural entrepreneurship. The people turning ideas and raw products into thriving businesses and experiences. Let's dig in. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Rooted Agritourism. I'm your host, Dr. Liz Fidler-Mergen, and today I have got Peter Giltzer. Giltzer. I said it wrong. Dang it. Giltzer.
It's good.
It's Giltzer. It's good. One of the co-owners of Milk and Honey Ciders. So please introduce yourself and just briefly give us a little intro.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm one third of Milk and Honey Ciders, and we operate an apple orchard and cidery just outside of St. Joseph, Minnesota.
Yeah, which is where my farm is also located. I'm on the north end of St. Joe. We both have a St. Joe address, but we're probably 10 miles apart, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're close to Collegeville.
Yeah, that whole area is so amazing. It's great. It's got the freeway running through it, which brings people, but it's got just a real sense of place, and it's cool. We got the college, two colleges, monasteries, like a great little downtown, and yeah, it's a special place. It's a good place to be.
So Milk and Honey Ciders, there's a lot of things that you do between, you know, you grow the apples, you make the cider, you sell the cider, you host events where the cider is done. So we're going to have to break this down kind of, you know, in order. But how did you get into growing the apples?
Well, that's kind of what we started with. We started with the apples. We started actually before the orchard with a nursery of just growing these cool cider specific varieties, so apples for fermentation. And
then you were going to sell the trees?
Well, no, we were always planning on making cider. That's what we wanted to do, to press and ferment and sell the cider. But we had to get the right apples. They were just not available. Like, there's a few boutique orchards that would sell some varieties, but there
just
was
not available in the Midwest, or not available?
I mean, in North America.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they would sell you Scion wood, which is like the buds that you would then graft onto the rootstock and grow the tree.
So this didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of a tree graft and how long that would take to get to apples that you can make cidery. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's bring it back to the beginning. When did this all start?
It started in 2011. That's when we incorporated.
So it's been 14 years.
I had some acreage outside of Cold Spring near St. Joe.
Yep.
We would press local fruit that we would scavenge, but then we were also grafting, and we had just a 40 by 100 nursery.
Yep.
We were grafting. We'd have these big grafting parties where we'd graft like 3,000 trees and put them out.
Would you put them directly in the ground, or would you put them in pots and then transplant them?
Yeah, just kind of all of the above. We did pots, and then we started going into the ground.
Yep. So if you did pots, I would assume then you had to have drip lines on top.
Yeah, we had the drip lines, and we had the fabric and everything. And we just had so many trials and errors. I mean, we graft a whole bunch, and then a whole variety wouldn't take. Like, they would dry out, because we weren't nursery men, you know?
Yeah,
much less orchardists, yeah. much less cider makers. We were just trial and error.
Yeah.
Then we would, I remember one year we had voles really bad. And so we were all happy. We're like, oh, all the grafts took. And then they grew like 18 inches, which is what you want. And yeah. then like the snow melted and it was just like
hollowed out.
Yeah. Massacred like all the voles. We just learned everything by trial and error.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The varieties that you started planting in the beginning, is that what you still use now?
Some of them still. Yeah, we would try like, we trialed probably 30 or 40 different varieties. And we would kind of just learn some, all of our favorite ciders were European at that time. So we'd find out what they were making. And then we would get these varieties that were from the English Channel area. So both on the French and the English side. And we would, you know, order them from Fedco or other like kind of like boutique plant collector websites.
And is there, I'm just thinking as far as if there is any like patents or, you know, was it hard to get certain varieties or anything like that?
No, these are, there's no knowledge on any of these. They're just old varieties.
Yeah.
A lot of them are not friendly to the Midwest or not even grower friendly.
Yeah.
You know, they might have been in a historical orchard in Normandy or something like that.
So these are, I mean, primarily Europe where they've been making cider for mead. Is that mead?
No, cider.
Cider.
Yep, no cider.
The difference between cider and mead, real quick.
Honey versus apples.
Honey versus apples.
Yeah.
Samsonite, way off.
Yeah. That's, no, that's a good question.
I'm like, is that the same thing?
People but, think. Yeah,
and is cider just apples?
Just apples, yeah.
And then wine would be grapes.
Yeah, so cider is to apples as wine is to grapes.
Yep.
So we're essentially winemaking.
Yeah.
We're just using a different fruit to ferment.
Yeah, yeah. Probably a dumb question, but I don't
know. People think it's like cider beer because they're just confused as to what it is. I mean, but no, it's cider. And the funny thing is, too, we call it cider, and that's its alcoholic form.
Yep.
We don't call it hard cider. It's just a nomenclature issue.
Yeah.
Because people think cider, they're like, oh, that's that cloudy stuff I get from the mills in the fall.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's sweet cider. This is fermented, so this is cider.
Yep.
Yeah,
I think, you know, as all farmers have to deal with, the seasonality of the changing of the season, depending where you're growing. And like you said, it's one great big experiment. I relate it to me growing ranunculus, which is a flower that you have to grow it in high tunnels. And it's got such a short growing season. It took me 3 years. And then when you think, okay, just take really good notes, try again next year, because you can't just go make a change, or, you know, you have to wait until the entire next season.
Oh, sure.
And I would assume, you know, the ordering and the shipping and of these grafts and the timing of it. I mean, you probably have a narrow window and.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And we've kind of like narrowed in on what we are good at. We still do way too much, but we I mean, we're done with a nursery game. Like, we figured that out. And then we're like, okay, there's nurseries where we can custom graft. So we can send them the varieties we want, and then they can graft them. And then they'll grow them up a year or two with their historical knowledge and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ship them to us. And then we can start at least being orchardists.
Yep. You know? So they're doing the grafting, and then you'll get a 3-foot-tall tree from
them. Yep.
So rather than grafting.
Yeah.
I don't start my own seeds for flowers. I buy trays of plugs
because
I just, by the time I invest in a greenhouse and plant those seeds and do all of that, whereas someone else can have that sort of segment of their business. And maybe there are some people that they found a way to make it profitable, or it's just plain enjoyable to them to do all parts of it, start to finish. But sometimes as a business owner, you just have to lean into what works.
Yeah. And it's good to understand and trial and dabble in all areas to figure out.
You have an appreciation for it.
Absolutely.
And that's what I've said too about people that are just getting into flower farming or whatever. And they're like, oh, should I just buy plugs? I'm like, I think you should try it for a year, because the value, yes, there's monetary value in saving your time and labor, but there's more of an upfront cost.
Yeah.
The cost of the seed or the cost of the graft. If you don't count your time, then it's on paper, it looks different, but you have that, at least that value and appreciation.
Farmers are terrible at putting a value on their wage, on their labor rather. Yep. And then you have to make that calculation of like, okay, is this better outsourced or buying from a
specialist? Can someone else? Well, that's the other thing is I can't grow these like someone else can.
Yeah.
I mean, and like you said, if half of them are lost, or half of them get attacked by voles, or half of them are rotted because of a spraying versus someone growing them in specific growing conditions where that's all that they do.
Yeah.
You're not doing it as good as them.
Well, absolutely. And we've even gone further, even with some of our varieties, where like Golden Russet is an apple that we use quite a bit. That's one of the few, like that's a non-European American heirloom apple. And that's one of the ones that we can grow it very well, but we can also buy it from other producers below our cost of production. So that's something we do too. So we kind of just specialize in the varieties that you can't readily get from the marketplace or from our partner growers. Yep. And so that's been a really helpful thing too, is just to really narrow down, try to be smart about this.
That reminds me of exactly what we're doing on our farm is I try to get those things that I can't get from the wholesaler. Other farmers don't grow, or the things that are maybe expensive to grow, or the things that are, you know, I've got the multiple cooler or what resources I have, and then focus on that. That reminds me of, we're still weighing out the pros and cons of it. My husband and I are like, what if we grew some apples? And you had sent me a really good email. So there are varieties that are cider specific. And like you said, that's what you grow because that's what you need.
Yeah.
But there are some dual purpose.
Dual purpose.
That could be for eating and making cider. So maybe they're not the best eating apple or the best pressing apple, but they can kind of do the work for both of them.
Yeah, those dual purpose. I mean, for someone who's getting into apple growing, we have some really good popular fresh eating varieties like Honeycrisp, for example, in Minnesota, which command a good price. But I think there's also some of these apples like the Golden Russet, for example, not only makes great cider, but is delicious for fresh eating. You get different textures, colors, flavor profiles that you're not going to find. And I think that would be a good proposition for someone, uncommon apples. You know, like, look at the variety. There's lumpy ones, there's big ones, there's small ones, there's green ones. I mean, it's just like, and they all have super interesting aromatics. And so it's like, I think that there is there for growing some of these uncommon apples. And yeah, you could sell them to cider makers or make cider, or you could make sweet cider, or you could just sell them as like a bag of mixed fruit. And people are going to, I mean, you look at this and they're like, wow, this is, you know, these are amazing.
Yeah. Let's talk about kind of the farming of apples in general. You know, you look at types of crops and what people want to grow and how they want to diversify their operation.
Yeah.
And you know, to just go and buy land to be an apple farmer.
Yeah.
It's for you, okay, at least the cider, you can spread it out throughout the year. You can turn a seasonal, a very narrow seasonal product into year round. But like we said, if, say, my farm, we decide to plant a couple acres of apples and, you know, we let people pick them, we sell them in the store, and then maybe half of them we sell to you or another cidery. You know, that's a good way to make sure that everything's getting used because, I mean, what's the wholesale cost of apples right now?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all over the place. I mean, kind of big picture, let's say you got an acre to turn that into apples. If you pay yourself, it's going to be like $20,000 to $25,000. You know, by the time you prep the land, you get the minerals down, you get the apples.
What kind of land do they need? Sandy?
That's the cool thing. It doesn't need to be your super productive corn ground or your vegetable or flower ground. They like well-drained, oftentimes topographically diverse slope land. It's going to be fine. So they can drain.
Yeah. Yours are on kind of a hill.
Yeah. Ours are on an east-facing hill, which works really nice. Basically, the sun comes up in the morning and it's going to hit that right away and dry that off. That's going to help with disease issues.
Okay.
And then by the time it gets really hot, the sun is behind the hill, which is nice.
Yep.
Apples are cool season crops. So they like that.
I never would have thought of that in east facing. Yeah. But, and those are the things that
there's not frost pockets. Yep. The cold air drains off and all. There's no standing water because they do like that.
Yep.
That sort of the dry feet.
So the first couple of years you have to irrigate them quite a bit or do you irrigate them still
First couple of years. And then we actually put some in. We haven't turned it on this year because it's been so wet. But we'll turn it on and drought.
I bet the last couple of years.
And that's really kind of just an insurance policy like anything. It's like you put all this effort into getting this crop going. And if you would lose that, you're just starting from zero again.
How long does it take for a tree to be really productive?
We're growing dwarf trees, so it's probably like 3 to 5 years before they come into production. And then from year 5 to year like 25 is kind of our sweet spot with these dwarf varieties.
And why dwarf varieties?
Dwarf varieties are great because with a standard tree, that's like the one you're going to find in your backyard.
Yep.
It's basically growing the scaffold.
Yeah.
It's growing the solar array, the solar collector.
Yep.
And then once it builds that infrastructure and builds that wood, it puts on fruit. Where with dwarf varieties, you can actually get there quicker. Instead, you're growing fruit rather than wood.
Yep.
And so everything's within 8 feet. You're never on a ladder. So you're pruning, harvesting, putting on all your nutrients and your crop protection, all like in a worker-friendly
yeah.
space, you know.
Pruning, how often do you have to do that?
Yeah, so, I mean, with pruning, basically doing it every year, and you're pruning for different reasons. You're pruning for disease. You're pruning for
crop production. You need to do that in the fall after or in the spring?
In the spring.
Okay.
Right before the sap starts flowing.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're kind of doing that.
February, kind of like, March.
Yeah, late winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here, we're in Minnesota, zone 4B, for those listening.
Yep.
For reference.
Yep. Yeah. And you're just trying to basically do that right before the sap flows. You don't want to like start too early and then cause some hormonal reaction in the tree that's going to cause the sap to float in the dead of winter. You basically want to do that right before that tree turns on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then what about, because you have deer fencing, right?
Yeah.
Around the entire...
That's the first thing I would, at least in our region, that we have to do. In some apple growing regions, they don't have that issue because they've like locally reduced the herd size or something. But the first thing we put up is an 8 to 10 foot fence because you might get away with it for a season. But as soon as they find that, it's on.
And, and they're not just eating the fruit. They're eating the tree.
Yeah. They're going down there. Like, oh, you planted a nice row for us. They're going down. And
perfect. Oh, good.
Yeah. When that tree's young, they'll go and eat that apical meristem, that top of that. And that just is going to set you back so much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the first. And we close the gates every night.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just yesterday, there's this beautiful little fawn with a red coat and a chubby body from eating our apple trees in there.
Yeah.
So they're going to get in there. Yeah. But at least you can...
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early! Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Sort of manage
that. So you should like chase Bambi out of your
basically.
Orchard.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Add this to my resume today.
We had one early on before we put the gate in, and it was like, I was like, God, there's something getting in here, you know? And so I put a trail cam up, and that thing, it was so crazy. It would, right after the last car left at night, like let's say 10 o'clock, it would come in, and then right before sunup, when we would get back to work, it would like leave. It's like just it learned our habits, and then
That's funny.
Very smart.
What are you gonna do about it? We talked about the growing. Anything else with grow? With
we've done the
there's
economics
more, but
a little bit. I mean, it's like okay.
Yeah.
I mean, big.
I feel like the 99% of our listeners, this is gonna be brand new to them.
Yeah,
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless this goes viral in the apple making world, which I hope it does. But...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's gonna be. You can look it up and do some. But I think, like, big picture, you know, with the economics, you're like, let's say that acre you spent $20,000 to $25,000 to get it in. It's going to, once it gets into production in Minnesota, maybe you can get 20,000 pounds of fruit.
Yep.
And then what every year?
Yep.
You know, with inputs, but like, what can you sell that for? You know, we can turn our fruit into a glass of cider that costs $7, you know?
Yep.
And that's a good value proposition. Maybe on a roadside stand, can you sell like a local Honeycrisp for $3 or $4 a pound?
Mm-hmm.
You can do the math on that.
Yep.
What is that? $60,000? It's pretty good.
Yep.
You know, and then back that and then pay all your wages.
Pay yourself back for all the years that you didn't.
Exactly.
It reminds me of my peonies. I have 1,000 peonies, and it's like finally this year I was able to. Because we were on year 3 or 4 for a lot of them. And it's like,
yeah,
I don't even want to know the hours that I've spent. I'm very fortunate to have my mother-in-law, Barb, is like the weed pulling machine. Like, she just enjoys it in the month of June.
She's out there.
Keeping up on it. But once they're established, it's fine. But it's like those first few years, you're just,
yeah,
there's so much to be done with it and so much labor. But eventually it starts to pay off. So the growing, that piece of it. Did you go to school for horticulture? What's your education background on it?
I went to school My undergrad's in basically forestry, and then I have a graduate degree, a master's in agronomy, basically.
Okay, so you did study this. When you're like, oh, it was all trial and error, that's how we learned. That's how I learned flowers, but yeah. You have more of a foundation giving yourself credit for.
Yeah.
And then your partners, your business partners.
One partner, his background was in aviation, basically. So he's kind of my engineer mind. Kind of fixes everything and manages all the grounds and everything. Yep. And then the other partner he's a master brewer. So he went to school at Siebel Institute and trained in Germany for brewing beer. And so there's similarities. He knows beverages, all those things. So
I would imagine it's a lot of contamination, that type of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
Cleaning, fermentation. We're still using yeast,
Yep.
You're putting packaged beverages out.
So what is the harvest window of these apples?
Our harvest window, it's now-ish. So we're sitting at the end of August recording this.
August 25th. October.
I mean, right now.
Today. Why are we here? Asking you to be here on Mother's Day for a flower farmer.
That's true. No, it's late August to all the way to Halloween, basically.
Yeah.
And a lot of those
You just go out and you see what's ready?
Kind of, and it's variety by variety. Mm-hmm. They'll start to drop. The cool thing with cider is because we can pick it at the peak of perfection. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure all those sugars are developed, that the apple is in its best form. Mm-hmm. And then we can sort of grind it and ferment it and capture all those good qualities.
Yeah.
We don't have to pick it early because it has to store.
Yep.
We don't have to pick it early because it has to, land on that farmer's market or that grocery store shelf at a certain, so that's the cool thing with cider fruit. And our pack out rate, the pack out rate is how much you can actually sell at a certain price or a certain grade.
Yep.
Is 100%.
And how are apples graded?
Well, they're graded I don't even know, fancy. It's the fresh eating ones. That's a certain percentage of your crop. And then maybe there's some that go to processing, juice or something like that. That's a certain percentage, And then there's then there's cull apples, right? Mm-hmm. Those are apples that you can't do anything. Well, we're 100. I mean, we're grinding these things up. Mm-hmm. They don't need to look beautiful.
Yep.
We can tolerate imperfections and some disease,
Yep.
And so it's cool. It's from that proposition for cider fruit, it's great because you can utilize almost 100% of your crop.
Yeah.
Versus
you're selling at a roadside stand.
Yeah.
You can't sell an ugly looking apple.
Yeah. So we can grind it up and ferment it. And then the other cool thing is a lot of inputs that are expensive in the apple growing.
Yep.
Fungicides, pesticides, things like that. Those are very expensive. They're not fun to put on. They're not fun to work around. And we can really reduce those.
Yep.
Because of we're growing processing fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so our spray schedule is a fraction of what it would be if we were growing fresh market.
Yep.
And I think that's been pretty attractive. We've actually gotten two farmers in the area. We have a dairy farmer. And then we have someone with a farming background and some land who've kind of looked at the economics of this and we're like, oh, this might work, mm-hmm. It's kind of a side hustle or a side crop that diversification it.
Especially
and that's kind of what I was talking with you about a little bit. It's and you could go a lot of directions with this. You could sell it to your people coming out. People love fresh apples.
I think if we were to add it, we're looking at where we would add it, what we would do, but we would love to have it partially a pick your own because we have the farm store sell in there. Yeah. And then what is so perfect is we have a cidery down the road. That's one of the biggest things that people get nervous about with competition or community or how that looks. But you never know what partnerships there could be. Mm-hmm. And so, I didn't know you that well when I was like, hey, how about, and some people can look at that as, what you're gonna make cider, or I don't want to tell you. Whereas you're like, well, here's the thing, because you see how it could be so mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
And what great marketing and partnership if we literally put a milk and honey cider sign up by our apples, the people that are coming and say, hey, well, we grow these for milk and honey and it's a cool thing. And we don't make the cider. You should go there after you pick your apples here, or whatever it could be. And so I think that you know, just knowing that you can't do all of it. You don't want to grow more apples than you're already growing, I'm assuming.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You're pretty maxed out on your land and how much you can do. Whereas if you have other people that are growing it for you and, you know, that's exactly what we're trying to figure out.
I think we misjudge who our competition really is.
Yes.
As agritourism operations or small farmers. Honestly, our competition are big box stores. It's the online stores. It's not the local. All those local industries and local businesses are not our competition. They are just adding to the experience in the community. Mm-hmm. We tend to look at each other as competition sometimes, and I think it's misplaced, mm-hmm. you know.
I agree.
In St. Joe, I mean, the more shops, the more restaurants,
the more things to do, the more, I mean, I look at it as my porch pot classes, my flower arranging classes, my pick your own. I don't have a restaurant. I have no interest in offering any type of food. I have no interest in doing that, in having a cafe or anything like that.
Yeah.
Will there be a food truck out there occasionally for some different things? Maybe someday.
Yeah.
But for now, it's like, hey, if I can time my things and they start at 10 o'clock on a Saturday, and oh, how convenient, you're done at 11:30.
Yeah.
Go into town and eat. And then when you're done eating, go have a drink somewhere, or, you know, time it out that way. It's like, if I can draw people in and we can all work together. And I think that that's one of the coolest things about Joe Town.
Yeah.
We have, and there's a reason we've chosen to put our businesses here. It's not a coincidence.
Well, you offering a class or something, an event or something like that, mm-hmm. that's only going to add.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're going to hit a saturation point.
No. And I also,
you know,
even with whether it's apples or flowers or beef or whatever product, the more people find and like and enjoy this local movement or, you know, this quality of product, the greater our industries will thrive.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's whether, you know, I grow flowers and I sell them to a lot of area florists. Like, get your flowers from them, get your wedding flowers from me. Like, I can't do them all.
Yeah.
If someone attends a wedding that someone else did really well and those flowers are there, and they'll say, oh, I want pretty flowers too. It just elevates the entire desire for it.
Absolutely. And if you look at in our area too, and like, let's say in this greater St. Joe area and the county and the St. Cloud nearby, we have maybe 200,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
If that is your pie, if you think that's your pie, then maybe we are in competition
mm-hmm.
with another mm-hmm. agritourism or another producer. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, if you get this momentum of cool things to do in this area,
mm-hmm.
people are going to come in.
Yep.
They're going to travel like just an hour down the freeway. We have like 3.5 million people.
Yeah.
They're going to come up here
if
we're doing cool stuff.
Yep.
And so it's like, just expand your pie. You know, don't feel like you're limited. Mm-hmm. You're fighting for scraps. That's just not, I think it's just misplacing the competition,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And I think that's exactly why St. Joe has thrived so much, is just focusing on a bunch of people focusing on what they do best.
Yeah.
Let's get into the cider making.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about that at all. Do you have to make it all in the fall? Can you freeze some of it and make it in February? I'm just trying to think, like, how do you time that?
So, if our first business is growing apples, our second business, and we have like 3 or 4 more businesses, but
mm-hmm.
if our second business is
weird.
Sort of
know the feeling.
Making cider.
Enterprise. It's an enterprise.
Yeah.
It's pillars. That's,
you know.
Yep.
And so, we're basically doing all of our processing when the apples are ripe. So it's in the fall.
Okay.
All the way into the early winter.
Because you don't want to, I mean,
that's
the logistics of freezing them or something. And then that's expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Basically, the apples are ready and that's where you get the highest quality. You can store fruit with different controlled atmosphere and mm-hmm. coolers and stuff like that.
I suppose apples would keep people keeping them in cellars for years and years, and I mean, so it's not like they need to be within days, but
the best time is right when they're peak perfection, you know.
Yep.
That's when all the flavors and mm-hmm. everything, there's little degradation going on, so
you have your, is it 3 always on there? There's the heirloom
fall. Oh yeah,
like you have your kind of 3 main and then rotational, or how do you?
I think our SKUs right now, we have about 8 or 9.
Okay.
But we definitely have our mainstays, and then we always do a seasonal
mm-hmm.
and some one-offs. We always have our estate, which is our premier,
yep,
you know, bottle conditioned
mm-hmm.
wild fermented cider. And then we dabble in sort of apple adjacent beverages like brandies. So that mm-hmm. would be like distilled cider, vermouth, which is a fortified mm-hmm. cider. We have an ice cider, which is another product line. We have some still dry.
And what's the timeline process?
Yeah, so a cider year is kind of like, okay, so you press the apples in the fall.
Yep.
Then you're going to ferment them.
Okay.
You're going to ferment them to dry, get rid of all the sugar, and
yep.
produce the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, what we're doing is we're cellaring them.
Yep.
So we're putting them right in the cellar, and we're using time and sort of gravity to mature it.
And is it going in a barrel?
Yeah, it can go in a barrel, go in a tank, go into these. We have these big poly-lined vessels.
Yep.
And basically, it's going in there and it's maturing. Like when you
get like debris at the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you're doing something called racking, which is basically putting a straw on and taking the best stuff off and
yep.
leaving the debris behind at its simplest form. So yeah, we do that. We age it anywhere from 4 months to a year.
Okay.
And then we're bringing it back out of the cellar. And we kind of have this library of different tanks, of different varieties, of different seasons. And we're blending it. Most of our stuff is all blended to try to get our cider lines. So like our heirloom, for example, is a semi-dry, aromatic, fruit-forward cider. And it's from the same apples and the yep. same orchards every year.
Yep.
When someone drinks an heirloom, we kind of want them having the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with an agricultural product. You're dealing with different seasons. And so we're blending to kind of get rid of some of those differences.
So it's not, I mean, one batch could slightly, to someone that's trained on tasting it, is obviously going to taste different.
Yeah. And we try to celebrate that a little bit. So we put our vintage year, you know, this is the 23 heirloom. That
yep.
we're serving right now, or 24.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, oh, wow, that's interesting. It's more fruity. It's less fruity. You
yep.
know, that was a dry year. That was a wet year. So
I have so many questions. How do you balance? You have your kegs for in the tap room and your events, but then you bottle and you distribute it.
Yeah.
I mean, do you just kind of keep an eye on it and, oh, we have extras. Let's bottle it and distribute it. Or how do you, because if you run out in May, like, and how do you, like, sorry, we're just closed.
18
we're just closed for the summer. Like, we don't have any cider. Your business is way busier in the summer.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean,
it is.
I go in spurts. I'll be there like 3 times in a month and then not there for a month at all. And, you know, whatever. Everyone, you know, whatever. But yeah,
well, in our early years, that's exactly what happened, because it's not like you can just go make some more.
Yeah.
You got to wait till the fall, and then you got to wait to press it and ferment it and age it and
yeah.
blend it. I mean, it was like an 18-month projection. And yeah, so many years we underproduced.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us maybe 10 years to figure that out.
Yeah.
And our poor, like, you know, I said that we have other businesses. So we have our wholesale business mm-hmm. where we're selling to like grocery stores, you know, liquor stores, wine, bars,
mm-hmm.
restaurants, things like that. And then we also have our on-site stuff, which is our tap room mm-hmm. and events and whatnot. But yeah, so we're just running out and yeah. It's really hard. I mean, our poor sales person
yeah.
was always just like, what is next,
yeah.
you know? Or like we pull it out of the tank and it's like, oh, it's not ready. Or it's
yeah.
cloudy.
Yeah.
Or it was just everything that could go wrong does go wrong.
And that's,
you know,
I think that that's one of the most common, because I think you've made a name for yourselves as a cidery. Just, you're well known in Minnesota and you do a very good job. But even you feel like things are just going to go wrong. That's just the way it is. And you
yeah.
have to just pivot and adjust. What percentage of the apples that you grow are... would you say it's 20%? Would you say it's 10%?
Oh, that we grow 30%,
that you grow that are in your cider?
Oh, probably 10%.
10%, yep.
Yeah.
Which, on the one hand, you know, you could say, oh, well, 90%. But how cool is that, that you get to support how many other farmers that get to grow
Absolutely.
For you guys? That's amazing.
Yeah, and our farmers, I mean, we've been buying from them from day one.
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, there's not that many that are growing the varieties we need.
Yep.
We're going to the best orchards. Mm-hmm. So right now we buy from a family in Virginia. We buy from an orchard in New Hampshire,
mm-hmm.
in Michigan, in Hood River, mm-hmm. Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going, because it's not like these apple varieties that for fermentation are very common.
Mm-hmm.
especially when we started.
And like you said, it takes minimum 5 years to get that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's cool to just have that diversity of producers. Mm-hmm. It really helps us.
So you have your, not brewer, what do you call it? Ciderer? Ciderer?
Yeah, cider maker.
Ciderist?
Yeah.
I don't know. So you have your maker.
Yeah.
And that's kind of his role.
Yeah.
Is he just, how does he tinker, experiments, like just comes up with a recipe or, hey, this is going to be my seasonal?
Yeah, his name is Adam Tice, and he's just trialing that of really good production tech that works with him. And Aaron works with him. Our wholesale director also works with him, too. Mm-hmm. And they're just doing small batches. Mm-hmm. They're trying things out. And they have some, over the years, developed some trade secrets that's like, oh, they learned that the hard way and the expensive way.
Yep.
And now that's like something that maybe all cider makers do, but we do it a little differently. And it kind of differentiates us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of how they're doing. Just, and our love really is, we're kind of cider purists, so we love those apple varieties. Mm-hmm. And we really like just to let the apple shine, kind of get out of the way. That's kind of our philosophy. Mm-hmm. So we don't filter, you know, we don't pasteurize. We don't add a lot of adjuncts or things like that. We just kind of like let the apples shine and get the best fruit and get out of the way. And so that was kind of our first love, is real traditional. So we like to do, you know, I talked about blending, but we do like to do single varietals where you're showcasing this one fruit, the Golden Russet or the Kingston Black, seeing what that fruit can do. So some of them might be a little bit more esoteric, you know, and especially in Minnesota or in America, where we all have this sweet tooth, you know, we like these, like, I think more than the Europeans or, you know, anywhere else, people really like sweet beverages. And so we're kind of having to walk that line a little bit. And listen to our customers.
Listen to your customers. Someone from California or New Zealand or Australia will come to Minnesota and taste the wine and probably think it's terrible. And I'm like, have you had the hot dish red from Carlos Creek? Like, it's pure sugar. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's juice. And I don't feel bad about that.
No, you should drink what you like. And so we've had to like try to, you know, like our seasonals are typically those. They're a little sweeter, and then we'll maybe bring in other fruits like or blood oranges or different herbs and spices to kind of satisfy that customer.
Well, and I think probably, I'm going to guess, one of the most challenging things would be you want to experiment with something and do this certain variety of apple because it's the craft, right? Because it's this, no one else has done this or whatever. But at the same time, you're still running a business. And just because this is the value and this is the time, if people really don't necessarily appreciate or care about that extra piece, just because it's what you want to be doing and, well, this is the price on this bottle and this is the price on this glass.
Yeah.
You know, you probably have to make those in the small batches. But that's what's so cool about having the tasting room, is to being able to, to trial that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know. And that is hard, especially with small producers. You know, how do you convey and communicate them the effort and the care and the work that you put into that and get a fair price for what that is? This is not mass produced in a factory. This is something craft. And so that's always been a tricky thing. We call it the milk and honey way, but it's always just the most convoluted, you know, labor intensive way you can do something.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you communicate that?
Yeah. Because you're picking the apples by hand. You're doing these things by hand. You don't have bigger orchards would have that are growing for production that you're buying those apples from. They've got the, I don't know, the tree shakers or whatever it is, I would assume.
They're still picking it by hand, but they're doing things on scale.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And that's great. And that has a place in the marketplace, obviously.
Yep.
But I do find that you can, as long as in your final product, whatever it might be, it's better and it feels higher quality and it feels more authentic. I think it's worth it. And I think it does differentiate itself.
Yes. Yeah.
I think you can taste care and you can taste quality.
Yeah.
I think you can.
Yes.
And so we just have to keep doing that. Mm-hmm. We can't cut corners. You can't put out something that's subpar, because that is kind of what you're selling. You're selling craft. You're selling fine
I think that's going to wrap up this round of part one of our episode. And then we're going to record right now. We're going to record part two, but that's not going to come out till probably this winter. So, and then Peter, real quick, where can we find you? Website, social media? Where do we,
yep,
where do
we find you? Milk and Honey Ciders, all the things, socials and .coms and
yep. Yep. And the tap room is open.
Oh yeah. We're open 6 days a week right now.
Closed on Monday.
Yep. Closed on Mondays.
And don't right go to St. Joe on a Monday. Everything's closed.
Everything. You can't get anything. But yeah. Yeah.
Which is good. Like, that's a testimonial to
yeah.
just the kind of work people do. And like, yep. we're open on the weekends, so we got to be closed on Monday.
But yeah. Come visit us. We're right off the interstate. Just an hour.
And then your cider can be found liquor stores statewide.
Yep. Only in Minnesota statewide. And then we can ship from our website to 35 states.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Rooted Agritourism. If you enjoyed it, please leave a 5-star review and share it with someone who would find it helpful or inspiring. Your support helps us reach more rural entrepreneurs, dreamers, and doers just like you. You can explore all of our resources at sunnymarymeadowcoaching.com, where you'll find each episode in blog form, along with free resources to help grow your business. You'll also find info on upcoming on-farm and virtual workshops, classes, and courses. Be sure to check out our monthly membership, Foundations of Peddling Perishable Products, where you'll get access to a full library of our original course content, plus ongoing support through monthly virtual meetups with others in the industry. Just click the link in the show notes or our bio to learn more. We'd love to have you join us. Until next time, keep growing with purpose and stay rooted.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early! Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.